Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
Hi, I'm Dimitri.
We have Dino here from Momentum Cyber. Dino, can you please introduce yourself and the company?
Yeah, happy to. Hi, this is Dino Bakouris. I'm one of the founding directors with Momentum Cyber. We are a 100% cybersecurity focused advisory firm. Many people know us, I would say, from our research and some of the material that we put out there. We put, monthly cybersecurity snapshots, quarterly market reviews, and annual Almanac special reports. We speak at cybersecurity conference like CyberTech in Tel Aviv, RSA, and many other places. So really viewed as a trusted advisor in the space. But essentially what we do is we support companies when it comes to their kind of evaluating strategic options. So that might be raising a round of growth equity, that might be looking at a potential exit. We also get hired on the buy side, and that's with folks that are large, oftentimes public cybersecurity companies. We work with clients kind of across the globe. We have international clients, we have clients here in North America, APAC. So really we're a global firm with a headquarters in San Francisco. And we work with folks really just to help them focus on potential investments, acquisitions, partnerships all across the cybersecurity ecosystem. So pretty agnostic in terms of the sector within cyber that we work with. We have clients kind of across probably all categories. We've been around for about 6 years now as a firm, and really glad to be on with you and Dimitri.
Dino, I met you in Tel Aviv during Cyber Week in 2019.
And I met you in Tel Aviv this February doing CyberTech, right before everything started and we stopped traveling.
That is right.
Why are you spending so much time in Tel Aviv? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Tel Aviv, I mean, we're talking about a country that's probably a little bit smaller than the state of New Jersey. But the last time I checked, it makes up for about 15% of the world's cybersecurity companies, right? So we track roughly 3,500 companies globally at Momentum Cyber and in our cyber cloud database. 500 plus of those companies are actually coming out of Tel Aviv, which when you look at it from a concentration standpoint, I mean, we're talking, probably an order of magnitude more concentrated as far as number of cyber companies per capita than even the United States. So when it comes to an amazing return on investment, aside from the fact that I love actually traveling to Tel Aviv and I love the country itself, the cyber ecosystem there and the engineering and technology ecosystem, in my opinion, is really world-class.
So before we move to our topic, SASE, we have a very important question to you. I think it's even more important than cybersecurity. What is your favorite hummus place and shawarma place in Tel Aviv?
Oh, that is a tough question. So far, I would say it's not just the individual hummus places. I mean, I spend a lot of time over at Sirona Market. And there's quite a few places there that I really love. Specifically, one of my favorite restaurants, it's called Claro over in Sirona. So I would say that's pretty high on my list. And there's a lot of one of my favorite things to do is just to walk around Tel Aviv and walking into some of the most unassuming places. And I've had some of the best hummus and shawarma just in a random neighborhood in a random part of the city. So food there is amazing. It reminds me a lot. My family's Greek. So it reminds me very much of Greece and just the time that I've spent in Athens and the culture, the people, the music. So just love it there.
I agree. Sirona is definitely very unique, a combination of different food. And unfortunately, I don't think such places exist in North America where you can just basically come and pick different food anywhere you want.
Yeah, it's not very easy to find. I think there's many versions of that, I would say, but the international flavor of Sirona is just, it's really hard to find elsewhere.
Great, great. So similar to Sirona that has multiple different foods, SASE, Secure Access Service Edge, has many different technologies. such as CASB, Secure Web Gateway, DLP, Zero Trust, SD-WAN, and a lot of other words in the alphabet. So the total addressable market is quite big. And I'm wondering from your perspective, because me and Dimitri see it more from a technical perspective and architecture, but we know really well that if there is no capital, if there is no marketing, if there is no money, it's very, very hard to sell. And it's very, very hard to tell the world that you have a good product.
Yeah, that is very true. I would say when we look at the when we look at the SASE market, I think to some extent you have to come back to technology a bit, right? The reason I say that is because when you say SASE, I think especially nowadays, SASE means so many different things to so many different people, and it seems to be kind of this amalgamation of a lot of core network technologies coupled with core security technologies. But when you start looking at the individual components that make up of a, it's almost like a, it's not just a SASE solution. It's almost like a SASE, you know, methodology, if you will, kind of like zero trust. People like to say zero trust, and there's not truly, you know, a zero trust company that's out there. There's pieces that when put together, I think you have a SASE solution. Now, don't get me wrong. There are SASE companies that are out there that will have a majority of the features. And I think it's fair for them to say that they are, you know, a SASE solution in the marketplace. But the way I look at it, it is an amalgamation of the SD-WAN world, DLP. You have, of course, firewall and, you know, secure web gateway. So those markets in and of themselves are massive markets, especially when you look at the firewall and kind of the traditional, you know, appliance-based firewall market. These markets are huge. Now, do those markets get completely displaced with the SASE solution? I don't believe that's going to be the case, or at least not anytime soon. So it's not like it's a mutually exclusive type market sizing exercise. There's, you know, overlapping circles, so to speak, of concentric circles and overlapping circles in like a Venn diagram of capabilities. I think the bottom line is that if you look at any one of those markets, I think it's a large market in and of itself. If you look at a market that is trying to pull significant pieces away from the secure web gateway market, for example, I think is much closer to what people traditionally think of as the SASE market than the CASB market per se. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't see overlapping functionalities, but I think there are some markets that are, you know, if I was doing a weighted, you know, weighted average or kind of a weighting of saying, okay, how much of the secure web gateway market is in SASE? How much of the firewall market would I include in SASE? I think those are probably the top two contributors. And then I think the rest, there's some new market share, right? Because SASE allows companies that maybe can't afford to have a firewall vendor, DLP, SWIG, SD-WAN, can't really afford to have this best of breed type world where they themselves are piecing together all these technologies and the crazy overhead you would need to really manage that type of architecture. So I do think that there's new opportunities for more, you know, call them simplified and more best of suite type SASE companies. But I think the bottom line is the market is massive. And if you start looking at taking away market share from firewall, just one market alone, it's just the opportunity here is tremendous.
Do you think SASE is a good term, or it's confusing people, customers, investors?
You know, I think the term, and when you really look at some, I mean, I know Gartner came out with their report last fall and they really started this whole discussion around SASE. I think the term is fine. I think that the concept makes a lot of sense. And I think when you look at into their materials, it intuitively I understand kind of what they're getting at, and I think that's great. Where I think there's confusion is what the market and the frankly the companies that are out there, what they've done with the term SASE, right? There's so much, you know, noise in the market, and that somebody that had a, let's say traditionally we're a VPN player that's layering in some level of security, they call themselves SASE. Somebody that has a CASB solution that is now, you know, spinning up points of presence around the world and trying to offer more functionality that you would see in like a Zscaler or iBoss, let's say, they're calling themselves SASE players. DLP players that add this kind of functionality, they grab on to SASE. SD-WAN is probably the biggest one that I've seen, that almost every SD-WAN player I've come across has now some type of SASE lingo on their website. So I think the market is successfully confusing one another, or companies are confusing one another and confusing chief security officers, because you can't just look at, oh, this company says they do SASE. You have to double click, and it probably gets to more of you know, Dmitry, Evgeny, your guys' world. You have to double click on the technology to see which aspects of SASE are these companies actually satisfying, and really evaluate them on a capability from a capabilities perspective. At least that's my opinion.
SASE is very interesting. Sometimes it really sounds like a salad of multiple technologies combined together. But overall, it's, to me, it looks like SASE is the holistic solution that includes all of these smaller capabilities and smaller functionalities for security of organization that combine into one thing and infused on top of that with the cloud capabilities.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And, you know, in your opinion, how crowded the space is right now?
Yeah, you know, I guess it depends on, it really ties back to this last point we were discussing. It depends on how you define the space. I think my previous comment is how I would frame it. I don't believe it's too crowded. I believe it's too noisy. And because it's too noisy, it's too confusing. And because everyone is claiming to be a SASE solution, you know, they might check the box of a handful of these functionalities and they claim SASE. It makes it appear that, wow, there's all these SASE vendors. And in reality, not really, right? You know, and I won't get into, you know, calling out specific companies, but a lot of companies, they claim to be SASE, but in reality, they're an SD-WAN vendor, which is a critical component of it. But in reality, they know SD-WAN, they're experts in the SD-WAN space, and no amount of, you know, marketing dollars is going to suddenly give them all these other capabilities. But, you know, they're calling themselves, you know, SASE players. And I think there's a ton of synergy between the two, and there's a lot of partnerships happening right now with kind of the core, you know, the true kind of SASE or maybe more secure web gateway and true network security delivered in the cloud, companies that are working with these SD-WAN vendors. But I think that's one example where, you know, they're claiming to be SASE players, and I don't necessarily view them as competitors, at least not yet. I think there's a lot of investment they're going to have to make to truly have a competitive solution. And I think the same is going to be true for the firewall vendors that are stitching together, you know, some kind of SASE solution. I think the same is going to be true for, you know, just a wide variety of folks that are pivoting into the space, or maybe not pivoting or repackaging, if you will, and certainly focusing on the development of capabilities to have a more holistic solution. But I think when you look at just pure play SASE vendors that are out there, there's not that many, in my opinion.
So you mentioned firewalls, you mentioned CASB, Secure Web Gateway. So we know all the major firewall vendors have a solution, a type of solution. We know all the major security web gateway have type of solution. We also, as you mentioned, some SD-WAN vendors and some pure cloud native guys as well. And by the way, CASB guys also in the space. So I'm wondering, what about the big companies such as Microsoft, AWS, and Google, that has their own infrastructure as a service, have now some security components as well? What do you see on the market? Do you think they will go into the space? Would they buy someone? Would they create the capabilities by themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think part of that comes down to how much responsibility do these players want to take in security? I think until now, and maybe Microsoft is probably the furthest along as far as the moves they made in the security space and their product portfolio, to, you know, openly say we will be responsible for security to some extent, right? With their, they have, you know, their SIM product line and AD and Intune and ATP and all the solutions that they have. But overall, the question becomes, how much do they really want to own the security? Or do they want to take more of a partnership marketplace? I mean, we've seen the work that AWS and Security Hub has done. You know, they've built a ton of functionality inside their platform. They've acquired some companies and they have more of a marketplace design to partner with vendors. And I think we'll still see more of the same there. I do believe that the opportunity is there. They have this global footprint, this global infrastructure. They don't yet own, you know, I kind of see SASE almost like securing the connectivity piece, so to speak, the traffic itself. They don't yet own that connectivity piece, but I think it's a natural fit for them. And I think acquiring in this space, potentially building in this space, I do believe is the direction they should head.
They also have a browser. So Microsoft has Edge, Google has Chrome. So they can potentially have the capabilities right inside the browser. So it'll be interesting to see.
You could start with that. I think as people start thinking through more just the, you know, core, you know, ZTNA type capabilities that may not be perfectly, you know, browser based, I think there might be some limitations. But to have a browser based solution, I think would be pretty easy for them to do so. I think it's really interesting, actually. I never thought about the browser angle, but obviously I think Google has a leg up with their, you know, Chrome browser. But having this kind of a solution could be another way to gain more market share in the battle of the browsers as well. I'm not sure what AWS will do.
But when you mention about Google, they have Beyond Corp. Yep. It's actually a remote access solution.
Yep.
And I think they announced around 2 months ago. It's full availability and now sell it as a ZTNA product.
Yep.
So it's part of SASE in a way.
And I think that is the direction the market is headed. So if there's anything that I do not doubt is that there will be many, many moves that are made in the space, strategic activity, investments, M&A, kind of organic development by some of these tech titans. I think there's going to be a lot of activity, and we saw the beginning of it, you know, really the beginning of it happening this year with, you know, Palo Alto and CloudGenix and Silver Peak getting acquired and others. I mean, we're seeing the chips start to fall, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this market unfolds over the next, call it 12 to 24 months.
What are the recent notable transactions you have seen in this space and you can talk about?
Yes, I mean, we've seen a few, right? So mentioning, you know, Palo picking up CloudGenix, as I'd say, was the first notable one. I think that was about a $420 million deal. We saw in the SD-WAN space, we saw HPE picking up Silver Peak, almost $1 billion deal, probably about a month or so ago that it was announced. We saw some smaller kind of acquihire and or tuck-in acquisitions. There's most recently, I think there's a company, Adaptive Networks, and Elfeek Networks. I think that was a sub-$1 million deal. I think Fortinet picked up Opaque this past month as well, as, you know, smaller deal. So I think there's definitely activity occurring on the strategic front. I think there's a lot of activity that occurred a few years back of folks that were buying SD-WAN vendors. My personal opinion is anyone who owns an SD-WAN vendor today is really thinking hard about how do we either partner or ultimately, you know, probably acquire in the space as well. So when you start to look at, you know, Cisco's got Viptela and VMware's got VeloCloud and, you know, even just some of the pure play SD-WAN vendors we talked about, I think all of them are thinking about this market and they can either try to build it organically if they're, you know, well-funded enough, or, you know, if there's someone like a Cisco or a VMware, sure, that they can take that route. Otherwise, I do expect to see more consolidation around SD-WAN, you know, just SASE. I think what we saw on the financing side was a little bit more of money flowing into the space from folks maybe, you know, pivoting or repackaging and going into this market, like Netskope, for example, probably the largest cap raise we saw in the beginning of this year is about $350 million. Obviously a juggernaut in the CASB space and really making waves in the SASE market. Obviously that's a lot of money that they raise, but at the same time, it is a significant investment that they're going to need to make to their kind of global POP infrastructure, their platform. I mean, this is not really the world that Netskope was playing in. So, we see, potential there, of course. But I also see there's some technology risk ahead for them as well. It's not like it's just a scaling question. So, spending money on their CASB's business, I think it's just pouring fuel on the fire. When it comes to their SASE business, I almost view that as kind of a VC stage investment within a large successful CASB player. So I think that'll be interesting. Similarly, Cato Networks raised a pretty large round. I think mostly I want to say it was from existing investors. I don't have that in front of me here, but I think around $70, $80 million round that they did earlier this year. Again, a player and strong player in the SD-WAN space moving into this market. I assume we'll continue to focus on kind of the enterprise space. And then most recently, we saw Perimeter 81 Insight put another $40 million into the company after, I think, there's $20 million earlier this year that P81 raised, and now Insight has stepped in and cut a pretty big check for them. I think they target slightly lower in the market, and they're not really going after the upper end of the enterprise, or historically they hadn't been. Strong roots in the VPN world, and now when you start coupling the VPN capability and you think of it as a way to securely connect and you layer in security functionality, I think it starts to look and feel and really be more of a SASE type solution as well. But you may not see them going, let's say, head to head with Zscaler at like a global 100, for example, or see them come into deals against like iBoss, for example. So, still lots of activity, lots of money flowing into the space. So it'll be interesting to see how these folks go after the incumbents. And I would say the next gen cloud type solutions, like we talked about, Zscaler and iBoss.
I'm wondering if I'm a small company that want to start today and I'm SASE, what's my chances? How do I present myself? How do I go to the big guys, to the Fortune 500? How do I differentiate myself?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And if I were a small company or early stage company or someone starting off today, I would really think long and hard about is SASE the place where you quote unquote start a company today. And the reason I say that is, I mean, it's a significant investment, and unless you're providing a SASE solution in a very innovative way that maybe flips today's model on its head, I don't know how easy it is to really get into this market unless you have kind of significant capital behind you. And what I mean by that is you can't really build out a global network of points of presence and going up against companies that have 100 plus points of presence around the globe. It's really hard to have a solution that's going to compete with them without major investment. And then you could argue, well, why can't we just leverage some of the existing cloud infrastructure that's out there and try to build this on Google, AWS? I think you could do that. I think your gross margins are going to take a significant hit. And especially when you're dealing with lower volumes, lower bandwidth, and kind of lower scale, it's probably not very easy to do so. So if I were a company thinking about starting in this space, I would really think long and hard. Is there a way to kind of redefine the model, or is there a way to offer the services in a way that perhaps the current model, maybe you can flip it on its head, if you will. So that's a great question. I just think it's one of those areas that does require quite a bit more investment, at least in the current way that folks are delivering this kind of service.
So the disruption opportunity there is from the business model perspective. I mean, technologically, there's nothing to innovate, right, in this space.
Well, I mean, you guys are the technology experts, I'll admit. But on the surface, from what we see, we haven't really come across technology limitations or security limitations. And it's not like We haven't come across folks that are like, yeah, you know, I would do this, except it doesn't deliver the level of service or security that I need. I mean, that's not the problem that I think exists in the market. I do think there's some opportunity for business model innovation, but how do you deliver the type of secure connectivity, reliable connectivity, low latency connectivity around the globe without investing in kind of a global infrastructure or just paying for it as you use it. But like you said, it creates a business model challenge.
If you want to start a SASE company, you need to be very innovative from the business perspective. And you need to know that there is not many pure play SASE companies out there.
I'd say from our perspective, and we typically are looking at companies that are more, I'd say, well established in the market. Perhaps you guys spend a little bit more time maybe at the earlier kind of seed stage or you know, Series A or incubator type companies. I'm sure there's probably solutions that are being developed as we speak, and there are other players in the market. I think it's just to have a SASE solution that delivers the type of performance functionality, especially when we talk about to the enterprise market, right? And the reason I bring that up, it's not just the global kind of points of presence. There's also the challenge of, you know, you're going to be going up against folks and trying to, you know, take out, you know, let's say a blue coat instance or some of these, you know, legacy incumbent solutions that are there. The amount of policies that you have to try to seamlessly transfer over into your SASE solution, it's a heavy lift. I mean, it's not a trivial task. So it's not just what capabilities are you offering, but you need to have a technology that is mature enough to be able to shift off of other solutions that have been, you know, baked into these companies for 5, 10, 15 years, and to be able to actually get them to shift and migrate onto your platform. I think there's a lot of investments, and you really need a fully baked platform that has significant time, energy, and resources before you can actually deliver SASE in a way that allows you to go after the upper end of the market.
Right, right. Well, maybe you know, someone can solve the pop point of presence problem using Elon Musk's Starlink. Who knows? Yeah, that could be disruptive.
No doubt there will be innovation in this space. But yeah, the key is, will it be business model? Will it be technology? The underlying infrastructure? I think there's lots of potential. But so far we haven't come across folks that are not, you know, companies that were started, call it, I don't know, 5-10 years ago at least.
Well, when it comes to the investor community, what are the investment multipliers investor expect to see from SASE companies?
Yeah, I think it's tricky, mainly because since we're talking about kind of many different markets that you're looking at, when you try to look at comparables, for example, you know, the closest comp to a pure play SASE company would be Zscaler in the market, right? They're trading at 30 times revenue. So I know a lot of investors and even strategics, I'm sure their biggest nightmare is to try to figure out how to justify that this company they're about to acquire or invest shouldn't be comped against Zscaler. And I think they probably wish Zscaler wasn't trading that high. But when you look at Zscaler trading at, you know, a 30x multiple level, you look at some of these SD-WAN deals that we talked about, trading anywhere from, you know, 6 to 7x on the low end to 20 times revenue or ARR on the upper end. I think you end up in a situation that, you know, and again, we focus more on the growth stage. You're probably looking at a, you know, 10 to 20x type ARR multiples that most of these discussions are having. Obviously, there could be situations where you're a little bit lower than that. You could be higher than that if you have, you know, quite a bit of traction in growth or if you're knocking down, you know, some monster clients and you have quite a bit of momentum with customers. So there's no magic formula, but you know, really it's like there's comps in that 30 range in the public markets and anywhere from, you know, 7 to 20, 25x when you look at M&A or even growth equity rounds that are happening right now.
Awesome. It was a very good conversation. I think we almost off top of our half an hour. I do have one interesting question that's not SASE related, but potentially maybe SASE related. the endpoint security market is huge. And I think one of the latest Gartner report were mentioned about endpoint and potentially SASE. Do you think that some of the endpoint players may try to get to this market as well?
That's an interesting question. I believe there's a natural partnership for this market.
Yeah, like CrowdStrike at Netskope, CrowdStrike and Zscaler, I know, SentinelOne, there's a number of vendors that try to have a technology partnership with SASE vendors.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, not something that I've thought of in the past, but you know, a lot of these SASE vendors will have some kind of agent that you put onto the endpoint, and you know, they will have kind of a presence on the endpoint, if you will, or partnering with someone to bake in capabilities like EDR capabilities. I could see that direction. I'm not so sure if I was a company that is sitting on an endpoint, absent that back-end kind of global infrastructure, I'm not so sure how they would really move into the space unless, A, they were innovative from a business model and infrastructure perspective that allowed them to not build up the points of presence, or B, maybe they could just invest in the space. And obviously some of the EDR vendors are very well capitalized, so I don't think that's out of the question. But going from an endpoint company to being kind of a network security delivered in the cloud, you know, true competitor, that seems like a pretty big leap to me.
Yeah, we saw some companies during our interviews that actually use endpoint for inspection, some of the CASBIC companies.
Yep.
I also know several endpoint security companies that have a light type of URL filtering, but it's, again, it's just a small part. Like I think Komodo Security, they endpoint has a very small footprint of URL filtering, but it doesn't mean they cannot, you know, invest money and technology to go there. So we'll see.
Yeah. The big question would just be how could companies like that cost effectively scale, right? And what do the economics look like if they were to do that? And I just don't know the answer. I think it's a good food for thought.
Awesome, Dino. Thank you very much. Anything else you want to bring before we wrap up?
This has been great. I'm really glad to reconnect with you guys. I look forward to running into you again. Hopefully one day in Tel Aviv soon, but if not there, somewhere else when the skies, you know, fully reopen and we're all safe and comfortable traveling.
We know for sure what restaurant you like.
And any time you want to meet at Claro, I'm in.
You know, if people want to find you on Momentum Cyber, what is the easiest things to do? Where they should go?
Oh, so MomentumCyber.com, our website. If you go there, there's a team page and you can reach out to any one of us. And also, I think more importantly, as a resource for your listeners, MomentumCyber.com, we have an Intel page. And on the Intel page, we have everything from the Cyberscape, which is our kind of industry taxonomy, if you will, that we slice up the market into, I believe, 42 subsectors. It's a bit of an eye chart. There's many logos. It's only about a quarter of the companies that we actually track in our database, maybe one-fifth at this point in time. So you'll see the Cyberscape on there. And then we also have all of our monthly snapshots, quarterly market reviews, cyber almanac, special reports, you know, some special white papers that we have as well. So I think that's a great resource. It's free and open to download for kind of internal usage. And then also, if you want to be on our mailing list, you feel free to sign up on that same Intel page, and we're happy to mail out our information to you. Right now, we have about, I want to say, 15,000 subscribers that subscribe to our material. So if any of your listeners want to subscribe, just send them there.
We'll definitely link in the show notes about links and where they should go.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you, Dino.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.